Good afternoon. Anapanasati, mindfulness with breathing. The main practice consists in 16 steps, which I'm sure you'll be glad to hear. And the 16 steps are divided up into 4 sections. Each of them has 4 steps, obviously. The part of the practice, the section, we're going to deal with mostly will be the first one, because that's obviously where to begin. All 4 of these steps are about breathing. They all use breathing in one way or another. Now, the practice, as we're going to look at it, the technique we're going to teach you is the one that Buddhadasa preferred and worked out and taught for about 60 years. He never changed beyond a certain point in his life. He taught Anapanasati always in the same way. His explanations varied, of course, they always do, because we're not reading from a piece of paper. That's not really the way to do it. But he was always more or less saying the same things. Now, it's in the first 4 steps of this practice that Tanachan, as he was popularly known, Buddhadasa, differed from practically any other meditation teacher in how to go about practicing the first 4 steps of Anapanasati. His understanding was fairly radical, but very sensible, and very obviously, at least as far as this individual is concerned, very right. Now, before we even start to think about practicing meditation, there are some things we need to understand about the process of meditation. And perhaps the first thing to understand is that it's a business of control. We're trying to control something. And that something is called the mind in English. Jitta in Thai, Chitta in Pali, amongst other words. We all have words for the mind in our own particular language. We're going to try and control it. That's what you do when you sit and meditate. You fix the mind on an object in order to keep it still, but you have to force that to happen. You might use very gentle force, but you're still forcing it. It's still a business of control. Buddhadasa was very aware of this and stressed it often, something which is not often mentioned. People don't like to talk about control. What we do. So right at the start, we need to get our heads around that. We're going to be controlling things. Now, you can't control the mind unless you control your life first. And this is where the precepts come in. The 5 trainings. Panchasila, Panadipata, Adinadana, Kamesumichachara, Musawada, Surameraya, these 5 trainings. Non-harming, not taking what's not given to you, controlling your sexual activities, keeping them within reasonable boundaries, that is, not just leaping around all the time. Controlling the organ of speech, keeping your speech under control, and keeping away from things that cause the mind to change in, shall we say, harmful ways. This, in days gone by, was abstaining from drinking alcohol to excess. In the modern world, they also include various drugs, because in the modern world, they've become aware that people like to use drugs. Now, this is ancient India. This teaching comes from ancient India. Indians have always known about drugs. It's not a modern invention. So the Buddha's teaching has been modified a little bit in that sense, but it's quite reasonable to do that. It's necessary to start to live, as the Buddhists would say, in a more truly human manner, keeping ourselves away from the things that stimulate, basically. And that's what the 5 trainings tell you to do. Not easy to just live that way, of course, it's a part of the practice. The practice of Anapanasati must include the 5 trainings as a preliminary exercise. It's the base your meditation is going to be built on. People normally don't live in a careful way. We tend to like to be excited And so we tend to infringe the five trainings more or less continually in different ways. Because of that, our mind is never in a condition to meditate. You can't live a normal, what we would call in the modern world, a normal human lifestyle and expect to find meditation easy to do. Because you will be controlling the mind, attempting to bring the mind to a state of stillness and peacefulness and quiescence. Now, if the rest of your life, if you spend 3 hours a day meditating, an hour in the morning, an hour in the afternoon, an hour in the evening, let's say you were going to do that, but the rest of the time you don't pay any attention to the way you live your life, you just live it in a normal way, then obviously the meditation is not going to work very well. So the silas, the trainings, you need to be aware of this. This is part of the practice of any meditation practice that comes from Buddhism, whether it's anapanasati or any other technique. This is the ground it's built on. You must be aware of this. Whether you want to take any notice of it, of course, is up to you as individuals. But I can promise you, if you don't, you can forget about meditating. It's a training. You train. You don't just switch it on like that. You have to learn to live properly, as Buddhists would say. And this then is going to help your meditation to develop more easily. That's the first thing to understand. Now that's something else we need to also be aware of. And that is the physical state of ourselves, our bodies. What sort of condition are they in? We need to have a body which is fit, which can allow meditation to happen more easily. This is also a requirement. People sit down sometimes without paying any attention to the way they are physically. And so they feel tight and stiff and their knees hurt and the back aches and they're always twitching around and moving because of that. They twitch around and move for other reasons too. But we twitch around and move because our body has not been prepared for meditation. But there's another thing that needs to be paid attention to, and this is where Buddhadasa really moves away from the mainstream understanding of how to teach the first four steps of anapanasati. He uses three of the first four steps as a preparation for meditation. He uses the breathing as a device to control the way the body is at any given time. And he does this particularly in the first step, but also you have to extend that into the first three. In other words, he teaches, or he expects you to teach yourself by your experience of how the breathing functions and how it interacts with the body, to learn to use the breathing to make the body fit for meditation. This is very radical stuff. So don't just plunge into the first step and start to meditate, that is, control the mind. You have to get your body under control first, and before you do that, or while you're doing that, you need to also pay attention to controlling your lifestyle. Once you've controlled your lifestyle and started to control the way your body functions, that is, you have some skill in using the breathing to cause the body to relax more or less whatever you want it to, and then this is a good platform for an attempt to be made to control the mind by using the breathing also. So let's get that clear. There's going to be two kinds of meditation being practiced here. One of them is more or less a preliminary and has to do with breathing. You will use the breathing, you will focus your attention on the breathing, but you will do it not to get the mind to concentrate so much as to learn about the breathing itself, different kinds of breathing you can do, and to learn to use the breathing to cause the body to do what you want it to, relax, calm down. It's fairly obvious that if you sit down and you're all stiff and tight and tense, or you don't feel very well, then it's going to be very difficult to get the mind to do anything apart from not feel very well too. And the idea here is very simple. You control the body, you get the body to relax. Now you can't just tell the body to relax, stop twitching around, just shut up, sit down, be quiet, I want to meditate. He won't listen. But you can trick it. You can play a little trick on the body by using the breathing. It's old knowledge that long, soft, deep breathing, carefully controlled in and out breathing, causes the body to calm down. This is no great secret. Probably a lot of people are aware of this. It also causes the mind to calm down. If you're feeling a little tight and agitated, you're getting into a situation with someone that is going to lead to something unpleasant, then you can just turn away and take some deep, long breaths. And you feel better after. The body relaxes and the mind calms down, starting to get angry, and now it steps back a little bit. So it's not amazingly new knowledge. It's been around for a long, long time. But you see, you can use the breathing in very beneficial ways. Instead of just breathing in and out, not taking any notice of it, not using the breathing in beneficial ways, just keeping us alive in a kind of 70% way, we can learn to use the breathing to prepare ourselves for meditation practice, but also we can learn to breathe more correctly. We can make a habit breathing more correctly by studying the breathing. And that's what you'll do in the first three steps of anapanasati. You won't so much be aiming to control the mind, to cause the mind to concentrate on deep levels. You'll be preparing the way for that to happen more easily than it would otherwise. You need some patience to do this, but not too much, because it's not something you need to do forever. So you have preliminaries to the meditation process, which Tanajan takes notice of. Most people don't stress these things. The Panchasilas, the five trainings, okay, these you usually mention, because it's essential that people understand they need to live in a controlled way, if they're going to get the mind under control to any extent at all. But you also need to be aware that you need to prepare your body for meditation. As a well-known fact also, ancient Indian knowledge goes into many branches, and are usually useful. In ancient Indian knowledge was quite widespread, the use of breathing in this way. It was called pranayama. It has to do with yoga, yoking the body to the breathing, yoking the mind to the breathing. Using the breathing in a beneficial way, learning to breathe correctly in order to increase longevity, to make your health better, that will certainly happen. And of course as a preparation for meditation, but perhaps in ancient times in India it wasn't so much as a preparation for meditation that this technique was used. It was more to control the body for other purposes. Certainly to increase our health, it would have been one of the main things, probably part of the Ayurvedic message. Well, there you go. This is really mainly where Buddhadasa differs in his approach to this technique. The rest of it, he's more or less in agreement with anybody else who would teach anapanasati. But in the first four steps, I want to make it absolutely clear where he differs. In the first three of those four steps, you won't be practicing meditation in the normal sense. You won't be just aiming to get the mind into a nice, peaceful state. You will do that, but the mind will not go deep into concentration while you're doing the first three steps, because you'll be doing something which is also quite radical. You'll be controlling the way you breathe in and out. You'll be forcing the breathing to do things. Now, in meditation practice itself, you never do this, of course, and Buddhadasa would agree with that. You don't. But the first three steps, to say again, it's not a straight meditation practice. It's a preparation exercise to make meditation more accessible for you. You learn to use the breathing. You learn about the breathing itself in the first three steps. You learn how the breathing affects the body by actually experiencing it, by sitting down, breathing in and out, and paying attention to the breath itself primarily. And then as you go into the practice, into the first three steps, you begin to observe how the breath and the body interact. So you actually experience how different kinds of breathing make the body react. All the time learning about the breathing, learning about the beneficial kinds of breathing, learning about the kinds of breathing that aren't beneficial. So you have knowledge from your own experience of how the breathing is and of what kind of breathing is best if you want to relax the body, if you want to make yourself healthier, or if you want to prepare the way for meditation to take place more easily. Fair start, but very obvious. Buddha's teaching is 90% common sense, really. So let's take a look at the first four steps of anapanasati, having mentioned that. We'll also repeat it about a million times to make sure you get the message. It's not a direct attempt to control the mind in the beginning. The first three steps you're learning to control the breathing in order to control the way the body functions. Once you've done that, or while you're doing it as a preliminary exercise, you can then start to work on the mind itself with the expectation that you're probably going to be successful If you don't prepare your body in this way, or if you don't prepare your life by paying attention to the way you live, of course meditation is really going to be a non-starter for you. Anyway, let's look at the first four steps of the practice and then tie all this stuff up together. Now the first four steps are all about breathing. We all use breathing. The first two are very straightforward, although not generally paid proper attention to because of the requirement of the first two steps of anapanasati. The first step tells us to fully comprehend long in-breathing and to fully comprehend long out-breathing. So that's obviously about breathing. And it's about long breathing, deep breathing, gentle breathing. So straight away there's a big problem there for people who normally teach anapanasati as a 100% mind control process, a meditation process, about developing the mind right from the first step. Because the first requirement, and this is supposed to come from the Buddha, so we should be aware of it, we should pay some attention to what the man said. Fully comprehend long in-breathing, fully comprehend long out-breathing. Human beings, generally speaking, given the way we live, rarely, if ever, breathe in a long, deep or soft way. So how are we going to practice the first step of anapanasati then? Got a real problem there. Now we'll come back to that. The second step is to fully comprehend short in and out breathing. Fully comprehend short in breathing, fully comprehend short out breathing. And fairly straightforward on the page, but when you sit down to try and practice them, things start to become a bit difficult. In long breathing, what does that mean anyway, long breathing? What's long in length? No, can't be right, surely, because it's always the same. People are different sizes, but the distance between the tip of the nose and the lungs is more or less the same. So it must be not to do with the length of breathing physically, although the old commentaries tend to think it was, or at least they give that impression by talking about elephants and snakes. Because these creatures, their lungs are farther away from the tip of their nose, particularly in the case of the elephant. But what this has to do with long breathing is beyond my understanding. It's obviously about the time it takes to breathe in and breathe out. If you take a normal breath, you can do this any time you like, and see how long it takes to take a normal breath, one that you don't do anything with, you simply watch it flow in and flow out. It's not very long, is it? The in-breath particularly has no length, it's usually very short. The out-breath is not particularly long either. So that's not a long breath. And yet the Buddha is telling you in the first step of anapanasati to know all about the long forms of breathing. You've got a problem there. If you understand anapanasati in the normal way, that it's simply a meditation practice. If you go into the second step, it becomes a bit more approachable because human creatures usually breathe in a short and rather unskillful way. We all do. We don't pay attention to life, we don't pay attention to breathing. So we don't breathe very skillfully, we never train ourselves to do that. So our breathing is usually short. It is. So the second step, well, it's not too bad, you can approach that one alright. So it seems. So the first step is still that problem with, but we'll leave that for now. So step one, fully comprehend. This means know all about. Comprehend, comprehensive, all around knowledge. Know all about long breathing in, know all about long breathing out, the first step. Then go on and do the short breathing. You know all about short breathing in, know all about short breathing out. Very obvious. The third step is where we come up against the ancientness of the Pali language. It uses expressions which you wouldn't hear, or forms of speech which you wouldn't meet with in the modern world. The third step is to experience all bodies. Right. It's a little mysterious and generally flummoxes people completely. Lots of people who teach this practice really don't get this at all. Experience all bodies. I thought, didn't you just say it was all about breathing? Yes, it did say that. And it is all about breathing. experiencing all bodies is also all about breathing. It's just using strange terminology. And then we're dealing with a language that comes from India and comes from a very ancient time. And the language we're dealing with is Pali, and Pali is a dead language. Nobody speaks it now. So if you spoke Pali, you were alive at the time of the Buddha, if you heard him say, if you heard him explain how to practice Anapanasati, what to do, when he got to the third step, he would say Sapakayam Bhatisamveti, which means experience all bodies. And you would immediately know what that meant, because the form of speech would make sense to you, but now it doesn't make such obvious sense. You see, in Pali, the body is the physical body, that's an obvious body, but there's also another body called the body of breath, and this would have been taken for granted in ancient times. There are other bodies too, but the main two bodies are the breath body, the breathing in and out is called a body, and often referred to as the body in the body. And the other body is the obvious one, the physical body, along with all the muscles and tissues and blood and bones. To experience all bodies then is the third step, and this means to experience the breathing and to experience the physical body at the same time, the idea of being. And you experience how the breathing interacts with the body. Now we won't go into that in detail just now, we'll carry on and come to the fourth step, which also sounds a bit strange. The fourth step is calming the body conditioner. Buddhism tends to be like this, it seems sometimes. It gives the impression of liking to mystify people, but not really. It's because the language of Buddhism is ancient, and translating it into a modern European tongue is not so easy to do. It always sounds a bit odd. Calming the body conditioner. Well, again, you know, we're talking about breathing here, even though it doesn't sound like it. I just mentioned in the third step, and I also mentioned when we began to talk today, that you're going to use the breathing, or train to use the breathing, to understand the breathing and to understand how you can use breathing to control the body. Because every time you breathe in and out, it causes the body to change in some way. And this is obvious, surely. When you breathe in, the body is energized. When you breathe out, it's merely breathing out the waste product. It's as if the body is being de-energized. Then you breathe in again, the body receives new energy. This causes the body to change continually, depending on the kind of breathing you happen to be doing. Now when something is changed in Pali, they call it conditioning. It is being conditioned. The breathing is conditioning the body, is causing it to change with every in and out breath. So the body conditioner in the fourth step, calming the body conditioner, is a kind of complicated way of saying calming the breathing. Excuse me. Because thus the breathing is the body conditioner, is what causes the body to change and transform. Now, fourth step is where all the meditation takes place in this understanding. Because when you calm the breathing down, and when I say calm it down, I don't mean calm it down a little bit. Calm it down until it practically disappears, until your breathing is just a tiny in and out breath of no significance at all, hardly anything. And this is the sort of breathing that will lead the mind quite nicely into full concentration. So calming the breathing, calming the body conditioner, means that all the meditation is going to take place in the fourth step. So you've got four steps, now we'll go through them again and explain them a little more. You've got step one, fully comprehend, comprehending in and out breathing, fully comprehending long in and out breathing. That's the first step. And there's a problem with that, as mentioned, because normally we don't breathe in a long, deep, soft, gentle way. Our breathing tends to be short, uneven, rather rough. If you teach this in the normal way, excuse me, as it's normally explained, then you have this problem straight away, and people will ask the question, you know, what about this first step then, long in and out breathing, what do I do about that? Because I don't breathe long. And anybody, any normal teacher would say, look, the first two steps you can mix them together. Because it's very difficult to get around the long breathing step, so this is what happens. If your breathing is longer than normal, doesn't matter how long, but longer than normal, then just know as you breathe in and breathe out that your breathing is longer than normal. If it's shorter than normal, or normal, then though it is a short breath when you breathe in and breathe out, you're breathing short. So you can mix the two steps together. Don't worry too much about, you know, this kind of approach. In other words, just make a kind of mush of it and hope for the best, the usual human approach to things, when there's no real knowledge behind it. It's Buddhadasa's genius that he could supply the knowledge. That's obviously not what the Buddha says, is it, though? Just, if you know your breathing's long, know it's long. If you know it's short, know it's short. A kind of casual offhand approach to the first two steps is not going to fulfill the requirement. And the Buddha uses quite direct terms. What they mean is fully comprehend. Know all about long in and out breathing. Know all about short in and out breathing. These are direct statements in the first two steps of Anapanasati. Now, he was a great man, a great teacher, so they tell us. And so can we just ignore what he says? How are we going to practice his teaching if we don't even start it properly? There's no way we can. Buddhadasa called himself slave of the Buddha, and that's basically what he meant. He paid proper attention to what the Buddha said, and when it seemed awkward and difficult and didn't seem to make so much sense, he studied it and practiced with it until he understood it, until it began to be clear. And that's what he did in the first two or three steps of Anapanasati. So he's obviously right in his approach. Now his approach is to do this, which is going to sound a bit odd. But remember, we're not really aiming to get the mind to settle down into deep concentration in the first three steps of this practice. We're going to use them to prepare the body for meditation. In other words, we're going to learn about the breathing in the first two steps, the two kinds, long and short. We're going to study the long and short breathing. In the third step, we're going to experience all bodies. We're going to experience all the different in and out breaths that we can do, or as many as we like to practice with, and the effect they have on the body. We're going to be observing how the body is affected by the breathing in the third step. But in the first two steps, we're actually going to experience the different kinds of breathing, the two main categories, long breathing and short breathing. Now, in order to do this, you're going to be asked to manipulate your breathing to make it do things. Because if you don't, there's no way you're ever going to practice the first step properly. The Buddhadasa says you should make your breath deliberately long. Long, longer, long as you like. Get to know the different kinds of long breathing by doing this. You can't approach this in a natural way. You can't just let the breath be natural. If you do that, then okay. Over a long period of time, and after a lot of practice and careful preparation of the way you live, your breath might become naturally longer than normal when you attempt to meditate. But that will take a long time to develop, and it will never become really long. You will never fully comprehend the long forms of breathing by just letting it happen. You have to make it happen. And that's what the first step is really all about. You sit down, you start with your normal breath, and you gradually increase its length. You can just will this to happen with your mind. It's easy to do. The Buddhadasa likes to be a bit more scientific than that, and so he says you can count as you breathe in, count as you breathe out. Now you're not counting the number of breaths that you do during a meditation session or anything like that. You're counting to make the breath long. And so you count in the manner of seconds. 1, 2, 3 in your mind as you breathe in. You count to 3 or you count to 5 as you breathe in, you have a 3 or a 5 second in breath. You have a long breath right away. You count 3 to 5 on the out-breath, you have the same length of breath on the out-breath. You have a nice scientific approach to creating a long form of breathing. Remember, we're going to study the long breathing here. We're not using it to get the mind to concentrate. We're learning to use the breathing, but first we need to understand it. And so you do this. You make the breath long, you make it longer, you make it as long as you like. But you be sensible, of course. You don't go making your breath 40 seconds in, 40 seconds out straight away. And you need to be scientific, you need to be intelligent also about this. You can make your breath long by breathing in for 5 seconds and you can finish up like a balloon. But that's counterproductive, that's not what's meant. You've got to control the way you breathe. So when you breathe in, you take 5 seconds to breathe in a normal amount of breath. That's not so easy. But that's what makes the body calm down and relax, learning to breathe correctly in this way. So you need to be careful how you do this. Start with your normal breathing and gradually increase the length of it. Slowly, slowly. So you don't fill yourself up with air. So you're struggling to make 5 seconds before you have to breathe out, before you can breathe out. That's not what you should be doing. You should be breathing gently and slowly in a very controlled way. So you need to pay very close attention to the process of in and out breathing. Now this is fully comprehending long in and out breathing, because you really have to pay attention to do it right. You can't help noticing when you do this how quickly the mind, the body begins to relax. Once you learn to do it, once you get comfortable with it, and that doesn't take long. You'll notice the body responds quite quickly to this kind of thing and becomes calm and peaceful in no long time. This is the first step of anapanasati according to Buddhadasa. It's a pranayama. You're using the breathing. You're learning to understand it. You don't need to really understand how the breath and the body interact in the first step. And you can't fail to notice that when you make the breathing long and soft and deep, it does cause the body to relax and calm down, and it also causes the mind to start to move in that direction too, which is much more precious. It's obviously beneficial. It's great knowledge, but it's very obvious knowledge. It's common sense. So use it, the first step particularly. Buddhadasa always stressed the first step more than the others, because it is so useful. Any meditation session that you start, you sit down, you get yourself comfortable, and you start to make your breath longer than normal. You deliberately make the breath long. And you count, if you take his advice as you breathe in, you will count quietly in your mind. As long as you like, many, as high a number as you wish, but be careful how you do it, and remember, it's not, you don't want to get a large amount of air into your body so that you feel strained. It's a question of breathing in a controlled way, and gradually increasing the length of the breath until it takes longer and longer to do. But you still more or less get the same amount of air into your body you will get from your normal form of breathing. You need to get a little more, because normally we don't get enough. So this is not an easy thing to do, but if you learn to do it, I promise you, you will find it very beneficial indeed. I've practiced this for years. It will also increase your health. It will improve your health, undoubtedly. You have little problems. It improves eyesight, believe it or not. Your senses are not so bright, not so sharp. You'll find they will become sharper over a period of time just by learning to breathe more correctly. It's called a pranayama, breath control exercise. Prana is breathing. It's the essential part of breathing, the life force. Breathing is basically the life force. So the more correctly you use this, the better for you. It's ancient knowledge, comes from India, probably pre-Buddhist actually. And the Buddha kept some parts of the things he'd been taught and learnt and mixed them in with his own practice. And this is one that's largely never been acknowledged, not my understanding, not in my experience of the different forms that anapanasati is taught in. Nobody seems to do it the way Buddhadasa did. But if you don't understand his teaching, you think it's all about meditation. And he does stress that you need to control your breathing in the first step particularly. And he tells you how to do that by counting. If you think you're meditating when you do that, of course, you have a problem straight away, because you know that you really shouldn't control your breathing. But if you're using the breathing for a different purpose, then it's perfectly reasonable to control it. As we said, if you want to get long breathing, to fully comprehend long breathing, you don't want to be trying to do that for the rest of your life. You want to get it done quickly. And then you make your breath long. This is the obvious thing to do. But remember, it's not a direct meditation practice. But also remember that we pointed out that the main point of anapanasati is not concentration. It's mindfulness. It's from mindfulness that concentration comes. The better your mindfulness is, which generally means faster, the better your concentration will be. As it's mindfulness that keeps the mind's attention on one object. It observes itself, and it keeps itself in one place. Now, for this, mindfulness needs to be fast. You can test your mindfulness any time you like. When you're watching your in-and-out breathing, and the mind wanders away from the in-and-out breathing, how long is it before you realize that that's happened? If you realize it in a second or two, then your mindfulness is not so bad. But if you don't realize until the end of the meditation session that you've been wandering all over the place, and you should have been watching the breathing, then your mindfulness is no good at all. At least, not in this sense. It's all about mindfulness, and the first step of anapanasati used in this way means you have to be mindful of the process of in and out breathing. Now controlling the breathing in this way makes it very easy to pay attention to breathing, because you're making it do things. Right? There's a little bit more to add here before we carry on. There's a technique that the old man suggests that we use when we do this. Normally meditation is taught here. You fix your attention at this place, tip of the nose. Feel the breath enter and leave, and just stay here, you don't move inside the body at all. Again, Buddha does it, it's very radical in this. He says, don't take any notice of that. That's a useful technique, but not in the beginning and not with this exercise. You should chase the breathing, as he calls it. Follow the breathing in, follow the breathing out, because you can feel the breath enter the body. You can feel it down into your throat to the top of the lungs. As the breath goes over the body surface, this is not too difficult. Especially when you're making the breath soft and deep and long. Because you're doing that, it makes the breath easier to pay attention to. So you follow the breath into the body and you follow it back out. Now here it suggests that you actually pay attention also to the movement of the body when you do this. Because when you breathe in, the lower abdomen moves. This part of the body moves. This is where the muscles are. When you breathe out, it contracts, pushes the air back out. So you have basically two things you can observe. The feeling the breathing makes as it goes over the body's surface and enters the body. You can go to about the top of the lungs with that, and then you can switch to the movement of the body, the feeling of the body moving. When we meditate, when we do anything, it's always feeling we're responding to. And breathing creates a feeling as it goes into the body. And the movement of the body creates a feeling. Now if you're controlling your breathing and making your breath 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out, you have a lot of time to follow the track of breathing down into the lower abdomen. Okay, the breathing only goes here, but the movement continues into the lower body. So you can go in, follow it, then pick up the feeling of the body expanding, and then when the out-breath begins, the body will push the air back out. You can feel that, you can follow it up to the top of the lungs. Pick up the breath at the throat and follow it back out of your nose. This is called chasing the breathing, following the breathing. The Thai term for this is wing tam. Wing tam. Something the old man was always stressing. So that's the first step, and also the technique that you use to do it. You chase the breathing in and out of the body. Never mind what people say about not following the breath inside the body. They say it confuses the mind if you do that, but this is poppycock. Nonsense. It's just people repeating things that have been said many years ago because they're scared to think of it in any other way. So, step one, fully comprehend long in-breathing, fully comprehend long out-breathing. Simply know all about the different forms of in and out-breathing by making the breath deliberately long. But remember, you're not supposed to be filling yourself up with air, you're controlling the way you breathe. So it takes longer to do. It's more relaxed, calmer, softer, gentler, deeper. And you chase the breath in and out of the body when you're doing that. In the second step, you come to the short breathing. And you follow the same basic pattern. The old man says what you do with the first step, you're also doing the second step. It's just that they're opposite. You can't help noticing when you make the breath long and soft, once you get used to doing it, how relaxing it is and how pleasant it is to do. But when you switch to short breathing, that means just switching back to your normal breathing to begin with, then immediately you feel different, or you do very quickly, as the calming effect of long breathing fades away and is replaced by a more normal feeling, which is not so pleasant. And if you make your breath even shorter than normal, excuse me, then the discomfort will increase. You see, you're learning about the different effects that breathing has. It's not what you should deliberately be doing, but you can't help noticing the short breathing itself is less pleasant than long, soft, gentle breathing. Short breathing tends to be rougher, faster, harsher. And it has the same effect on the body, the opposite effect. It doesn't calm it down, it tends to wake it up and make it agitated and uncomfortable. And so you should also recognize this. You should practice with short breathing, but not so much as the long breathing. Don't take long to realize that short breathing is generally associated with unpleasant states of body and mind. The mind too becomes a little bit agitated once the breathing is no longer pleasant, is no longer relaxing and calming. And doesn't calm the mind either. The mind also wakes up and starts to get a bit rocky and unpleasant. Buddhadasa referred to short breathing as abnormal breathing. Our normal breathing is abnormal breathing in reality, says he. And the shorter you make your breathing deliberately, then the more abnormal it will become. So do that and experience the short breathing. You don't need to spend forever doing it, but also be aware to some extent, because you can't miss it, of how you feel when the breathing is short. And that will do. Use the same technique, chasing the breath in, chasing the breath out. Not so easy to do with short breathing, but still not very difficult because you are making the breathing short. You're still interfering with the breathing in the second step also. Don't need to explain the second step too much. It's much the same as the first step, just the opposite, and has the opposite effect. One calms, one agitates, one wakes up, one makes tension and stress. You could notice also, if you have the mindfulness to do it, the state of your breathing when you're in a situation which is a little bit awkward, difficult. If you're traveling in a foreign country, especially if you're a woman traveling in India alone, then you're going to meet with this quite a lot. You know, the attitude too can be rather offensive sometimes, not deliberately so, it's just that that's the way sometimes it feels. You'd certainly be stressed and tense, at least in your first few days in a country like that. In Thailand also to some extent, but less so, you know, more or less. Once you get away from the touts and the holiday resorts, Thai people tend to leave. They're not so nosy, not so intrusive. But it's interesting to observe how your breathing is when you're starting to get a bit fed up with something. Somebody is beginning to annoy you. Somebody won't leave you alone. How do you feel then? You don't feel good. And if you observe your breathing, you'll find it's very different than soft and gentle. It is not. It's very uneven and agitated. Your mind is agitated, your body is agitated, your breath is, it will match that state also. And so you're already beginning to make the knowledge complete within yourself of how the breathing and the body interact. Because you're actually doing this, you're experiencing it, you're practicing it, you're observing it. You're not taking it for granted because somebody is telling you about it. You actually experience it. The third step, experiencing all bodies, is simply doing the job complete, making full knowledge of how the breath and the body interact. And it's not difficult to understand once you realize what all bodies means. It's just breathing and the physical body. These are all bodies. All the different kinds of breathing, all the different body states, the physical states that arise from the different kinds of breathing. You experience all the different forms of breathing, long and short, and you experiment with them to see how the body is changed by the different ways that you can breathe. You make the knowledge full and complete that when you breathe in a certain way, the body changes in a certain way. When you breathe in another way, it changes in a different way. When you breathe long, soft, deep breathing for any length of time, the body settles down and relaxes. You pay attention to the process. You observe the reaction of the body to the breathing in the third step. You make the breath short, fast, rough, then the body wakes up and becomes agitated. You can use long breathing in the third step to calm the body down, then switch to short breathing and see how it changes as the short breathing kicks in. The long breathing ceases and the short breathing begins. And you can do it scientifically. You can make your breath long, and then gradually make it shorter, 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 and see how the body reacts as the breath gets shorter. Just making knowledge 100% of something which is essentially common sense, but we need to experience it, so we know for ourselves that the breathing affects the body in intimate ways. It doesn't just keep us alive. It has other uses. We can actually manipulate it in order to make the body function differently. In the third step, the idea is that you make the job complete. You really understand the breathing, and you really understand how it affects you. Now, in order to do this properly and correctly, you should be aware of the whole process of what we call life in the third step. That is, you're breathing in and the body is changing, but you should also be aware of how your mind is changing. Long breathing relaxes the body, it also relaxes the mind. Be aware of that. And be aware of your mental state also, how the way you feel mentally affects the way you breathe, because it affects the way you feel physically, and the breathing also is affected by that. It's an interdependence, a human creature. It's not just a one-way street, it's not just about breathing affecting the body and the mind, it's also the opposite. The mind affects the body and the breathing, and our physical condition, how we feel physically. If you've eaten something which didn't agree with you, affects your mind, you know this. You feel depressed, unpleasant, but it also affects the way you breathe. So in the third step, we should strive to be aware of the way the breath, the body, and the mind interact, and really start to understand the human creature on a fairly surface level, albeit. And we really make complete knowledge of the interdependence we call us. The really important part of this is the first step, the long breathing, because you can use this immediately. But if you want to do the whole pranayama exercise, you should do the first, second, and third steps and spend some time with them. The first step you never really stop doing because it's useful. You can use it at the beginning of any meditation session. But the second step, short breathing, you don't need to practice that for very long at all before you know what short breathing is. The third step, okay, again, it's not something you do forever. You want to understand how breathing affects you, you can do this slowly over a long period of time. But the really important and useful thing is the first step. You can use that at the beginning of any meditation session, and I suggest you do. You do it until you feel relaxed enough to just allow the breath to become natural. And then you start to meditate. And when you start to meditate, you enter the fourth step. So you can kind of skip the second and third steps quite quickly, but always use the first step. Get your body into a state where it feels good and calm and your mind is becoming peaceful. The breath, the long breathing will do this. And when you feel peaceful and calm enough, stop manipulating the breathing, stop playing with the breathing, let it become natural. Let it go back to its normal state. And then carry on simply observing it. And that's the meditation process. It's the most simple thing to explain under the sun. It's a very basic technique. Anywhere you'll get the same advice. A Buddha Dasa in the fourth step, when you enter the fourth step, he will still say that you carry on following or chasing the breathing in and out of your body, even though you're no longer making the breath do things. You're now trying to meditate when you enter the fourth step. So the first three steps, you see, are preparation. Once you've done them sufficiently, then you move on to the fourth step. You prepare yourself. You should make the fourth step more easily approachable. Not saying it's going to make the fourth step work and cause the mind to immediately go into full concentration, that will happen. But it will make it easier to approach getting the mind into a nice, peaceful, concentrated state. If you've done enough long breathing, your mind should be beginning to concentrate to some degree. Not much more than normal, but it will be more peaceful. So you carry on chasing the breathing. Now you're letting your breath become natural, so you don't have so much time to follow the track of the breathing all the way down to the abdomen. You'll have to work that one out for yourselves. Some people just follow the breath into the throat instead of all the way down, because when you breathe more normally, it doesn't take so long for the in and out breath to happen. When you're making the breath long, you can make it 20 seconds long in if you like. That's plenty of time to observe every kind of feeling associated with in-breath. You can chase the breathing very clearly, very easily. But when you allow it to be natural, it immediately changes its nature, becomes different. It's not so easy to follow. But you can still do it. Buddha Dasa suggests that you stick with the chasing technique until you get it to work, even when you try to meditate, when you allow the breath to become natural in the fourth step. So, just one thing we really need to add before we round this off. Because there's not much to say about the meditation technique, you just do it until it works, but you need to know how to do it. There's one thing you need to know above all other things. You need to observe breathing 100% properly if the mind is going to really react. If you're going to get the mind to concentrate to any decent level, you have to follow the breathing correctly. Now when you're forcing the breathing in the first three steps, this is quite easy. But it's difficult in the fourth step because of the nature of natural breathing. But you're going to have to be aware of the full length of the breath in and out, and stay with it continually until the mind begins to react. The way to do that is to be particularly aware of the ends of the breath. When you breathe in, be aware of the end of the in-breath, where it becomes an out-breath. There's a little point at the end of the in-breath where the breath stops. You don't make it stop, it does it naturally, because you can't breathe in and out at the same time. So there must be a point where there's no breathing. And so you try to detect that as you breathe in, as you chase the breath in, chase the breath out. It's another reason for just following the breath into the throat when you start the fourth step. You try doing that, it'll drive you crazy. It's probably the best advice you could have, because it will make you breathe, observe your breathing properly. And in the fourth step, where the meditation begins to be practiced, you really have to do it right. There's no sloppiness allowed, I'm afraid. You can't just do this in a general sloppy way. You go nowhere. If you really can pay proper attention to the breathing, then you can get a result even within 10 days, providing you're willing to live carefully, etc., etc., etc. So be particularly aware of the end of the in-breath, because there is a moment when the breath stops and becomes an out-breath. It can't be an in- and out-breath at the same time. And this will make you pay right attention to the breathing. It will feel very awkward and tense and artificial until you get used to it. But don't worry about that. You have to take that and get used to it. Once you do, this will pay dividends. You also do the same with the end of the out-breath. When the breath comes out, drifts away, stops. In the beginning, there will be a big gap between the end of the out and beginning of the in-breath. Usually there is with the out-breath. Once you settle down, if you do the pranayama, you'll probably find that almost immediately you breathe out, but you don't feel like breathing in straight away. So there's quite a gap between the end of the out-breath and beginning of the in-breath. So you pay attention to the gap. Nothing's happening. Just be aware of the feeling around the nose until the in-breath begins. Because if you don't do that, of course, the mind might wander off. In fact, it will do this quite a lot anyway. But this is one of the ways you can stop that from happening, but it's also one of the ways, the main way, you can pay proper attention to breathing and be sure you're doing the job right. So when you breathe in and breathe out in the fourth step, if you've done the pranayama, particularly the long breathing, you stop manipulating the breathing, then you enter the fourth step of anapanasati at that point. You pay attention to the breath by following it in, perhaps just to the throat, because your breathing now is natural, so you don't have so much time, and it's not so easy to observe the breathing. And you try and pay particular attention to the point where the in-breath stops and becomes an out-breath. It's like throwing a ball against a wall, a rubber ball. You throw a ball against the wall, it bounces straight back. But there's a point when it's not moving. You can't go two directions at the same time. It hits the wall, it stops, but it comes back. Seems to us, it's immediate, but there is a point where the rubber ball actually is still and not moving, and it's the same with the breathing. So try and detect the end of the in-breath, where it stops and becomes an out-breath. Drive yourself crazy trying to do that. It will make you into a proper meditator eventually, though. It's priceless advice. The same with the out-breath, but with the out-breath you have a little longer to observe, because as I mentioned, the out-breath, it will drift away, and you can feel no need to breathe in. Once you settle down to this, you will find you don't need to breathe in immediately, and it can be several seconds before you feel the need to make an in-breath. So, that's about it, really. The first three steps, as mentioned, are pranayama. I can't repeat that often enough, because I don't want any confusion about this. You're not really meditating in the true sense, that is, you're not developing concentration deliberately. It's not the main aim. You're learning about the breathing in the first two steps, and then you're learning about the effects the breathing have on the body in the third step. So this is not a direct effort, a direct attempt to control the mind in the way of deep concentration. But what it will do is develop mindfulness, and develop it very easily and very well. And mindfulness is the main thing. So don't worry about that. The fourth step of anapanasati is where the meditation starts and develops. Very simple technique. You just chase the breath in and out, you let the breath be natural, and you pay attention to the end of the in-breath and the end of the out-breath. And this is going to feel unpleasant, but it will, if you practice it, and you persevere, and you're patient, and you'll need to be, it will make you observe the breathing properly. And eventually this is going to pay dividends. This is what causes the mind to take hold of the breathing. There will come a point when this technique will begin to work, and this is what you do. You keep chasing the breathing, trying to observe the ends of the breathing until it works. Now there will be a point where the mind gets interested in this job. Now if you just do this generally and sloppily, the mind will never get interested in observing breathing. But if you really pay attention, as we've mentioned, to the ends of the breathing particularly, eventually the mind is going to kind of take hold of the breathing. It will get interested. And then the meditation will go up a level immediately. It's a very different feeling when that happens. You can't fake this. You can't pretend it's happened. It's not possible. But when it happens, then at that point also the breath will begin to change its nature quite naturally. Up until this point it's been soft and gentle breathing perhaps, not particularly long, and now it's going to start to get short. Once the mind gets interested, the breathing will respond by getting shorter and calmer and gentler and tinier. And over a period of time it will become nothing at all, hardly any breath. And when this starts to happen, you can change the technique. And instead of chasing the breath in and out of the body, which is what we've been doing right from the start, then we'll now start to what they call guard the breathing at this place. And normally meditation teachers tell you to start here, right at the beginning of the technique, but this does not work too well. Because the mind is not subtle enough to feel the breathing clearly here. Simple. But once you've got the Wing Tam, the chasing technique, to actually get the mind interested, once you feel that the mind goes up a gear, it's a very different sensation, then everything is immediately 50 or 100% clearer. You can really follow the breathing very easily then, and you can feel the end of the breath like it's right in front of you in neon lights. It's very obvious. Until that point, it's very unclear. And suddenly everything is very clear because the mind has responded to the process of meditation. You've done it right, you've persevered, you've had patience, it's driven you crazy, but you've finally got a result. And suddenly it's all very easy to do. And then it's very easy to fix your attention in this one place and just watch the breath get shorter and tinier until it becomes a little flickering breath, just flickering in and out of your nostrils. At least that's what it feels like. Once you reach that point, if you can, then you're really on your way as a meditator. Real concentration is very close. You see, the breath calms down simply by paying proper attention to it. You can make the breath calm down by counting. That's what you do in the first three steps. And one of the things you do. But in the fourth step, you don't do that. You let the breath be natural. You observe it properly and the same thing happens. The breath becomes calm. But it becomes calm in a different way. It becomes very tiny. That's why the fourth step is called calming the body conditioner. Again, it's common sense. The fourth step is where the meditation takes place. The old man was right. He had a genius for these things. Could see things other people can't very easily. So there's the meditation technique. You wing down in the fourth step until it works. You can't fake that. Everything suddenly becomes clearer and easier and more obvious. It feels like the meditation is doing itself. And you switch your attention to this one place because your breath then will get shorter, will begin to shorten, and will very quickly become very tiny breathing indeed. And you persevere with that until something happens or something doesn't happen. It depends on you. It's not a guarantee that anything amazing will happen. Although in a way you've already done something amazing. Still, we'll leave it at that point and we'll just go over some of this again tomorrow. Not too much to say about the meditation technique. Just pay attention to the ends of the breathing. Make sure you do that. And follow the old man's advice. Use the chasing technique. He knew what he was talking about. Don't worry about it feeling awkward and artificial. And don't worry about making you feel like you're making the breath do things still. Don't worry about that. You'll get used to that. Just do the job properly. And the only way you can really do that is by making sure that you're aware of the ends of the in and out breathing. Do that until you get a result. Simple. Simplest thing in the world. Most difficult thing in the world to do. Okay, we'll leave it at that. Come back tomorrow and just go over some of it again. Also mention a few other things. So, have a nice day.